For a lot of years of my life, I lived in the Seattle area and had relatives in the San Francisco Bay Area or vice versa. I have driven I-5 many, many times between those places, going to visit or coming home. Lots of those times, especially in seminary, I was alone. One of the things I did as I bopped down the freeway in my Volkswagen Bug, or later my little white Toyota truck, which some of you will remember, I would sing chants and short songs over and over and over, sometimes for an hour or more. A favorite was one that we often sang at chapel services at my seminary, Star King School for the Ministry. It goes, "Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you." And I would sing that over and over and over. Eugene, Portland, Chehalis, Seattle, singing and singing. And I did actually used to wonder occasionally if I were being particularly safe, since chanting as you are driving for 70 or 80 miles as a stretch kind of makes you spaced out a little bit. It turned out okay, though. The song meant a lot to me. And I've been thinking about it, thinking about listening, since our music director, Carrie, came up with this idea for a service. I've thought about simply listening to what is going on around us. I've thought about listening for the mystery, for the divine that can shine through, can ring through in any time or place. I've thought about how part of that process is listening to one's own heart's song, knowing how we genuinely feel, possibly even changing when we hear truly what's happening inside of ourselves. And I've thought a lot about listening to other people, which is really hard sometimes, particularly if we're not sure where we are inside. The Rule of Saint Benedict is a document for living in community. It has been used for 1,500 years without ceasing by worldwide Benedictine communities, numbering something like 1,400 now, like St. Gertrude's Monastery, a women's community in Cottonwood, the Ascension Priory in Jerome, a women's community. And this remarkable document, still used, begins this way. "Listen carefully, my child, to my instructions, and attend to them with the ear of your heart." The bells at a Benedictine monastery call everyone to listen and to prayer, which is a kind of listening. Benedictine writers are very clear that their lives are about listening to the world, to oneself, to God, and to others with the ears of the heart. Now, a service about listening with almost non-stop talking in it seems a little weird. And also stereotypically Unitarian Universalist, I'm sorry to say. The choir sang, "Come and find the quiet center in the crowded life we lead. Find the room for hope to enter. Find the frame where we can be free. Clear the chaos and the clutter. Clear our eyes that we can see all the things that really matter. Be at peace and simply be." So let's stop again in this service for just a little bit. Closing our eyes might be the best thing. And during that time, let's just listen for every sound that we can hear. I tried this at home, and I actually found it to be pretty difficult. I had to go out of my computer room because I could only hear my computer. I couldn't hear and my own breathing. So when we get done, I'm just going to ask a few of you to shout out anything that you heard or that might have surprised you. So let us just sit briefly for a few moments and listen. raise your hand if you heard or felt something that surprised you, something that was unusual. Lilting tone when an adult speaks to a child from the nursery. Harry.
I heard keys just shift if somebody moved.
Shifting if somebody moved.
Squeaky shoes.
Squeaky shoes. I heard those too. Martin. The air conditioner. Creaking of the building settling. Tom. You felt more when you're not listening carefully. Ah, okay. Things we don't usually notice when we aren't listening in that way. Listening to ourselves and listening to others are intertwined in ways that we don't always think about. If we haven't paid proper attention to ourselves, to the voices of prejudice, of assumptions, of fear, of uncomfortable love or attraction, of repressed discomfort, if we haven't paid proper attention to those, we will not be able to listen to each other in a way that actually honors the other. So just kind of monitor to yourself as I'm speaking to you. I'm not going to ask you to say these out loud. The variety of responses you might have as I am talking. I want to tell you about a time when not listening to myself got me into big trouble with another person who felt and was very much not listened to. I was the president of the District Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association chapter. And I was leading a very difficult discussion. The subject sounds innocent enough. How much should we, as individual members and as a chapter, how much should we commit to supporting the annual district assembly? This is before Janine's time. Some of us felt, still feel, very strongly that ministers need to be there in force, offering workshops, helping with worship, encouraging our folks to attend. Others declared that there wasn't much in the assemblies that benefited them, and they didn't intend to go and were not going to be coerced into it. Thank you. Feelings were running high, although the discourse was reasonably civil. And remember, there's like 50 or 60 people in the room, and I'm leading this discussion. I wanted to be fully present, to hear every word of every one of my colleagues, but I got in my own way. I was tense and uncomfortable because things were tense and uncomfortable, and I did not listen to my own heart and gut. One man who is perhaps 10 or 15 years younger than I, and I'll call him Tom, although that's not his name, he made an impassioned speech. I don't even remember which side he was on. Maybe the one I didn't agree with, actually. Because I acknowledged it, and then I said, I don't even know if I can tell you this. I said, in a misguided attempt to lighten things, and besides, you're cute. You should have seen his face. Not to mention the unbelieving silence that changed the energy in the room. By and large, the group respected me as a leader. This yanked a lot of my credibility away for a little bit. He felt disrespected. His inherent worth had, in fact, been disrespected. Everyone else felt derailed, and I just felt awful. It was a long time before Tom and I were on speaking terms in a regular way, even after several abject apologies on my part. I think he wanted to bring me up on charges to the National Ministers Association, but was dissuaded from doing that. The point is, I was in charge of a hard, emotional discussion, and I, by not listening to myself, got in the way. I was unable to listen to the distress of the room because I was deaf to the voices in my heart that signaled distress in me. I went into lighthearted fix-it mode when the only thing that was appropriate was deep listening. Can you think of a time when your deafness to your own true feelings made it hard or maybe impossible to hear others? I can see some of you do. I did learn from it, as humiliating and miserable as it was. And you notice I haven't used it as a sermon story. It was probably a good 10 years ago, because I'm still sort of mortified about it. But I had to change. I had to learn something from that. And so the next time we had an emotional discussion, and this time it was even worse, the emotions were running really high, I heard that old familiar voice of tension and fear. Found myself going into that, and I just stopped the discussion. We all wanted to be genuinely heard. We all wanted to hear each other, but the raw feelings stopped the ears of our heart, those ears that know the divinity in the other. So I spoke a poem, one of the stanzas of which says, "And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who speak. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark." And then I had us just sit in silence for 5 minutes. After that, the conversation de-escalated and became more constructive because I and we were able to take some silent listening time in that quiet center to feel things fall in place. And we actually solved the issue. I want to give you one more example, and this is a very little one, of how our assumptions can get in the way of listening to each other. Now, this assumptions thing is a very, very important way that we fail to hear, even when we're well-intentioned, and the consequences of our assumptions can be fatal to relationships and rending to people's hearts. In my example, it isn't, but it can be. I was reared in a Wonder Bread household where the gushy center of a piece of bread was valued and the icky old crust was not. Bob Wallace was reared in a Jewish family that cherished really good bread like rye and pumpernickels, and the crust was the best part. Early in our relationship, he offered me a crust of a piece of good bread. I was outraged, and I thought his gift to be a supremely selfish fake gift. My unquestioned assumption did violence to the generosity that had arisen from Bob's best self. He was giving me the best part of the bread. Since it was just the two of us, I mean, at first it was a little awkward, but it was just the two of us. We were able to say, oh, wait a minute, in my family, oh, wait a minute, in my family, so we could voice our assumptions, and we were able to laugh. Now, if it had been a bigger misunderstanding, though, or with people who didn't know each other very well, think of the terrible feelings we could have gone away with, our assumptions intact. Bob is a big selfish piggy, and I'm an ungrateful wretch. That's what we would have gone away with. I also learned, by the way, that the crusts of rye and pumpernickel are really good. Now, in the song that we're going to hear soon, the singer asks, "Can you hear my cries? Can you see my eyes? I am calling out to you." Each of us, in our varied and different ways, wants to be heard and wants to hear. So I'm going to ask you to do something that may take you out of your listening to a sermon comfort zone, if you have one of those. Let me tell you the whole process, and then I will walk you through it. And I asked you just to take a breath and do what needs to be done. I'm going to give you a moment to think of something important about yourself that you are willing to share with someone else this morning in one sentence. Important, but not earth-shaking for today's purposes. I don't want the other person to feel as though they have to be therapeutic or call 911 or anything like that. Like, I might say, this would be an appropriate level for me if I were doing this. I regularly find God in the grove out here on our church grounds, and when I do, it makes me cry. That's an important statement about me that I would want someone to hear, but it's not so wretchedly deep that it's going to call something forth that we don't want. After that, I'm going to ask you to find one other person with whom you will share and decide who will go first. Take a deep breath, everybody. This is a little bit like those old chapter meetings. I can feel the tension rising. It's going to be okay, I promise. Okay? It's not going to take very long. It's not going to hurt. We might even actually feel a little something about listening. So when the bell rings, the first person will just look into the second person's eyes and speak their sentence. When I go to the grove, I find God there for me, and when I do, it makes me cry. There will then be 30 seconds. The other person says not a word. You can respond non-verbally if you like. No more talking. When I ring the bell again, the second person speaks theirs. We have 30 seconds of silence, and it's all over. If you can find a person that you didn't come with or don't know real well, fine. But if you can't do that and it doesn't feel comfortable, pick whomever you choose. Okay? So I'm going to walk you through it. Have you thought of your sentence? One sentence. Not huge, complex, compound ones, if possible, okay? A sentence. Okay, I'm gonna have you find the person that you're going to go with. If you're at the end of a row or you don't have a person, raise your hand and a congregational care team person will come to you. Okay, find someone to speak with. Do that. Okay. Everybody got a person they're going to talk to? Let's be quiet for a moment, okay? Thank you. Just silent for a moment. Let's not say our words yet. And if you have, you can say them again. I want us to speak out of silence, into silence, out of silence, a little more silence. Because the true listening involves not a lot of chatter, but some speaking and some space and some listening. So when I ring the bell, will the first person just speak their truth to the other person? And then we'll let 30 seconds elapse with no speaking of any sort. Close your eyes for a moment. Turn toward the front again. Just reflect for a moment if there was anything you said or heard that might make a difference in your life or the life of the other person. Sing with me. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. A Benedictine commentator on the rule speaks of her hope that we can all move close to that place where we, in her words, can finally hear the people we love and love the people we've learned to dislike and grow to know how holiness is here and now for us. Until then, she says, the monastery bells ring out patiently, patiently to remind us to listen. Just listen. Keep listening.